Hello, Internet. Today's episode of Unpopular Opinion is brought to you, as always, by us. If you're listening to this for free on SoundCloud, don't forget, if you get bored this Thanksgiving, you can always sign up for our subscription service at connectpal.com/unpopularopinion and hear an entire back catalog of podcasts you haven't heard yet. Also, don't forget to come check us out December 11th in Seattle and December 14th in Portland. Information on how to find tickets for those shows is available on our website at unpops.com/tour. Thanks. Enjoy the show.
El futuro tiene nada más que la confrontación.
Hey, welcome to Unpopular Opinion. I'm your host, Adam Todd Brown. I used to write weekly columns for all sorts of internet places, and then I would use those columns to put forth all sorts of crazy opinions. Then I'd come on this show to defend those opinions, but now I just do whatever the fuck I want because I ain't got no boss. Joining me today, we were just on tour together with Portugal the Man, so expect us to talk a lot about that. He's one of the biggest rappers in all of Germany and a supremely talented man who I got to watch kill it on stage every damn night for the past few weeks. We're excited to have him here, ladies and gentlemen, Casper. Also joining me, he's one of the funniest comics in the game right now. In fact, I'd argue that, for my money, it gets no funnier than this guy. Be sure to catch him telling jokes next month in the Pacific Northwest. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about myself. It's going to be a great show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Unpopular Opinion. This is a different kind of show than we normally do. We have a phone guest today. Only a phone guest. Casper from Germany. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Yeah, doing good. Just got back home, and it's freezing cold in Germany, man.
I just got back home, too, and it's so pleasant in California. I mean, other than the fact that we just elected Trump, but other than that, the weather's
I was there.
The weather's great.
Is it? Oh, man. I wish I was still over there.
Just to give everyone some background, Casper was on the Portugal the Man tour with me, and it was goddamn fantastic.
We both... Spontaneously.
Yeah. Tell people how that happened.
So the guy I make records with, he was hanging out in LA and I just got back from a tour in Germany and I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what to do with my time. So I saw Kanye West was playing in Los Angeles and my friend Marcus was there. So I was like, hell yeah, I'll go see Kanye West. He's probably not going to come out to Europe till who knows when. So I flew into Los Angeles. We saw the Kanye show. We got shit-faced, pissed drunk. It was an awesome night. And we woke up the next day, and Marcus said, hey, man, Portugal the Man are playing. And we had them out on a tour in 2014 when I did a really big tour out in Germany. And I was like, yeah, we should totally go visit these guys, see what they're doing. So we hit them up, said, we'll go watch the show. It was the Troubadour, right?
Right. Really famous venue.
Yeah, I've heard so. That's why I guess that's why I thought it's a huge venue.
Yeah. If I thought it was at least bigger than it is, it's very small.
Yeah, it's just because I've read of it so much, like famous Guns N' Roses shows and all that stuff, right? So we got in there. I was like, oh man, this is shockingly small club. And so we watched the show, saw your show. It was a great night. And then we were sitting out in the bus, and we were having drinks, and we got really drunk. And then the tour manager, Scott, famous for being a hard ass. Nice, but yeah. A hard ass.
Yeah, Scott's amazing.
No, it took me days to figure out whether he's a nice guy or not.
Yeah, the first time I met him... my entire group was convinced he just fucking hated us. And then, like, I asked him later, and he was like, nah, man. Why would you say that?
But I love him. He's the greatest. He's their tour manager, by the way. So he just looked at me. He's like, so you're going to fucking play the show tomorrow or what? I was like, yeah, I'll play the show. Yeah, sure. Why not? So then we got up the next morning. We were still really hungover. and I just sent him a text. I was like, "So this this opening gig is this on or what?" And his answer was, "Fuck yeah, it's on." So we drove over to the Pomona show and we opened for that, and we were all really nervous. I mean, Marcus and I were really nervous because, first of all, I usually play with a band. It was like the first time ever really doing this DJ thing, right, or doing it in a long while, to put it that way.
Right.
And then I didn't know how people would perceive me not doing my music in English. So it was really, it was a nerve-wracking experience, to say the least.
Yeah. I thought you had a great line on stage. You said someone told you that you can't understand most rap songs today anyway. So what difference does it make? And I felt like that was a pretty good point.
But it is kind of true, isn't it? I mean, I'm a native speaker. Sure. And a lot of the stuff I really love and like, my friends in Germany, they'd be like, "Well, so what did he say in that part? I don't understand that line." And then I'm like, "Well, hell, I didn't either." I don't know. But yeah, so we did that and then got off the stage. And then Scott was like, "So you coming to fucking tour or what?" That's his exact words.
Yeah, that sounds like Scott.
And then we joined the tour, and it was an amazing experience for me to be on it, and you know, to meet you, to hang out with the guys, to meet Chris, to see all these towns I'd probably never. I mean, those weren't like touristy towns, you know what I mean? That's like the shit you get to see, like when you're either living in the States or if you have shit to do in those towns, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and it was like, I mean, it was a really different experience for me too, but probably in a kind of a different way, because for me it was like one of the biggest things I've ever done. Those are the biggest crowds I've been in front of. Same as you, there were a lot of cities and states that I didn't think I'd ever make my way to. Like Alabama was super interesting. Georgia, North Carolina, like that whole area was. Those were all places I never expected I'd be. But for me, it was like the biggest thing I'd ever done. But for you, you're like huge in Germany, right? These are like smaller crowds for you.
But I felt like people knew you. I mean, that you had like people coming to see your thing. That's...
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, I'm obviously the 99.9% of the crowd was there to see Portugal the Man. I have somewhat of a following, but I definitely wouldn't be able to book a tour that size and like sell 1500 tickets in Dallas.
Yeah.
Like that would never happen. But like for me, that was, it was one of the biggest things I've ever done. What was it like going from, you know, you've already kind of blown up in Germany. What was it like doing these shows in front of crowds that were less familiar with your work?
I would say it was a lot of fun because, like, not to sound like a douche or anything, but I do extremely well in Germany. Like, right. we play in bigger, we play to bigger crowds. Like, I headline festivals here, or, you know, we play like a 12K cap arena, or, you know, sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller, but it's always around that. Right. And you get lazy with things, you know what I mean? And you become bratty with things, and maybe even, you know, snotty with things. And it was like going in a time machine. It was like back to, you know, 2002. It was just like back then, like I would just have like a CD player on stage and like have the beats, just put them on by myself, and you know, no one would know what I do. And it was just like a time capsule back to that, to back to where I can, like, you know, I'm again more aware of what a gift this is I have going on over here, you know what I mean, in a way,
for sure.
Like and plus touring in the States is really different. I mean, we talked about this a lot, but like if even if you came over here and you would play really small clubs, like if we got you over here to do a comedy tour to 100 or 200 cap clubs,
Right.
There would still, like, you would get in the morning, and there'd be breakfast there, and, you know, people would make you lunch, and there'd be snacks and, you know, drinks, and there'd always be a fridge full of beer, of course, because that's what we do, I guess.
Jesus.
And, like, when we got into these venues, I was like, well, where's the stuff? Scott was like, fuck you mean? I was like, coffee or what? He's like, wherever you fucking go get a coffee. I don't know. It's like, holy, what? Well, what? Where does the stuff come from we have in the evening? And he was like, well, that's when I go fucking get it.
Yeah, yeah. He, like, has to actually go out and buy shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. It was so much fun. And, you know, I was just so grateful to be there and just to meet all these people and, you know, get to see Portugal every evening and, you know, hang out with all these people that surround them. Because I think I think in a way it's a weird karma thing that, like, since they're such good guys, that they attract good people. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. They're one of the best groups of people I've ever known. Like, there's no one that is even sort of unpleasant that travels with them. Like, Scott seems gruff at first, but Scott is the best. Like, it's,
yeah,
the whole experience was just so much damn fun.
But yeah, you know how, like, sometimes you hate a band, but then you meet them and you're like, shit, they're really cool guys. So right. Now I have to tell my friends why I hang out with this shit band, right? And a lot of times it's the other way around, that you really love a band and then you meet the people and you're like, oh man, they're the worst. I'm going to burn their records. I never, ever want to be around them again. And so, I mean, even back like 2 years ago when I had them out, like they came in, like before the first show, I just wanted to go and say hi. And I was really afraid of that. Like, you know how people say never meet your idols?
Right. Oh yeah, of course.
Oh, I've had that a billion times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I'd go in to say hi and then go back to my band's dressing room. They'd be like, well, how are they? And I'm like, oh, man, they're really nice. They're just really nice.
Yeah, they actually opened for you in Germany. How long ago was that?
That was on a tour in 2014.
Yeah. John was telling me that, like you were saying, so much bigger crowds. He said those were some of the biggest shows they've ever done.
I think they'll be way bigger at some point. I think the album they're putting together is going to be amazing. I think they're going to be
For sure.
I think they've been like at how big they are now. I think they've been that for a long while. I think I think one day it's just going to pop and they're just going to blow up and everybody's going to see, like, oh man, they have like 8 amazing records. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they have such a great catalog. They've been around for a while. They have so many albums. And yeah, it was just amazing getting to watch them every night and getting to watch from different perspectives, because I'm not in a band, so I don't, like, when you're out front, just everything's coming at you as far as sound and it just kind of all melds together. But some nights I'd watch just kind of from Kyle's perspective and just kind of watch him playing keyboard. Like, Kyle's a fucking genius.
And he rocks out, dude.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Kyle fucking goes for it. It's amazing. And yeah, it was just so much fun to be able to watch all of that. And I also got to watch the Chicago Cubs win the World Series on the tour bus.
That is one of my top 5 moments of this tour. I came back in on the bus, and was that the first show, the Alabama show?
That was the Alabama show. So you would have been on Dallas too, right? So that.
No, I rejoined Alabama after Pomona. Yeah, that was when we went into that bar, and everybody looked pissed off, and I was like, well, what's the vibe? I mean, is this one of those historic entrance historic side entrance deals, or what's going on? And then Zach was telling me about the World Series, and I was like, you know, not to be an asshole or anything, but I was like, is baseball still a thing? All right. I just didn't know. I'm just outsider looking in. But the answer of people X was, well, it's kind of not a thing, but the World Series are.
Yeah, and it was a historic thing because of the Cubs. The Cubs hadn't won a World Series in 108 years. And it was historic for me because I was born and raised in Illinois, which is where the Cubs are at. And yeah, I got off stage in Birmingham and was like, later, I'm going to watch the game on the bus. And then, yeah, you came on the bus near the end of the game, and I was fucking crying.
Dude, you were bawling. You were in tears. But then I could see the beauty of the whole thing unfold, because I think after you got off stage, you asked Scott how it was going, and for some reason it was already on longer than it should have been, right?
Right, yeah.
I don't know the rules. Just so the listeners know, I'm not trying to be an asshole about baseball. I just really don't know what's going on. So then I got off stage and I was like, well, what about the baseball thing? And Scott was like, this is crazy. It's still going on.
Yeah, it went into extra innings. And I watched most of the game with Scott. He was on the bus with me. And at one point, the Indians tied it up on a two-run home run. And, of course, I was miserable, and Scott just starts going, no, holy shit, did you see that? Like, yeah, man, I saw that. It's not my team. Keep it down.
Man, but when I got on the bus and you were bawling, you were like, man, this is beautiful. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm so happy for you, man.
Yeah, there's a video of that on the Portugal the Man Snapchat somewhere. I don't know how Snapchat works. I don't know if those videos disintegrate.
Do you Snapchat?
No, I have one set up for the podcast, but I've never... I think I sent one video, and it was of this light-up wolf lamp that we have in our studio. I just can't... I can't get behind it. I'll figure it out someday. What about... Do you use it?
Well, I had one set up, and I always figured out, like, what do I do with this? Because... basically, all of Snapchat I've ever watched was people like walking around drunk or just randomly filming people being in crowds, or you know what I mean? It was just random shit. I was like,
yeah,
well, there has to be a concept behind it, you know, because that's what you think. Like, what's the thing? What do you do? And then everybody's like, no, there's no thing. Just random shit. Just put random shit on it. No, like. I kind of don't get it. So then I started following and watching people and found out, like, oh, man, there's people that are really, like, there's people that have nothing else to do than document their lives. So this is awesome. So then I started watching other people. And then I was like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to have public meltdowns on Snapchat. I don't want to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I don't know how many Snapchat stories you've ever watched, but that's when it really gets into... here's every minute detail of my life today. Like, you'll see motherfuckers brushing their teeth, just driving nowhere. Like, any video of someone driving better end with an accident, or I don't want to fucking watch it. Like, I've seen driving before. Like, bump into something, please. It's really maddening, and I just can't. I feel like it's my duty, if I'm uploading something to the internet, I feel like I have to make it interesting.
It has to go somewhere.
Yeah. And I think that's the part of Snapchat I can't get past, is just, I guess, loosening, breaking myself from those chains and realizing I can upload boring shit to the internet too. But it just seems like a kind of a waste of time.
I guess I'm just too... maybe it's just old people syndrome.
But you can't be that old. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it could be. Yeah, it seems like we age faster with social media, because once you have like I feel like I'm just getting good at Twitter.
You had a power tweet. You had a Orange is the New Black supported and backed power tweet.
That's right. That's right. The night after the election, I tweeted a thing about Trump, and it resonated with the people.
Hell yeah.
Including, what's the guy's name? Matt McGorry or something from Orange is the New Black.
The Weird Guard guy.
Yeah, the Weird Guard. And I told Chris Black that, and he was like, oh, fuck that guy. He's awful. I went and looked at his Twitter, and yeah, he is kind of overbearing. But hey, shout out for the retweet. I appreciate it.
So what would you say was... What would you say was your toughest crowd of the tour?
Oh, definitely Santa Cruz.
I wasn't at Santa Cruz.
Yeah, it was the second night of the tour. Sacramento, the opening night, was amazing. They played an Oasis song, and I think that's the only time they played it. They played Don't Look Back in Anger. That was fantastic. Sacramento was great, and then Santa Cruz was such a nightmare. Santa Cruz, I've done comedy 3 times in Santa Cruz, and it's always been just the worst experience.
Why?
Well, the first time I went, I was up there to film this web series called Burn Booth that I used to work on, and we did an open mic the night before we were recording, and we didn't have a sound guy, so we just hired a sound guy when we got to this open mic, and that was fine. But the show starts, and once the comics go up, it was me and 2 other comics, this guy that we just hired to do our sound starts heckling us.
The sound guy did?
Yeah, like really loudly too. And it was like, it was the weirdest thing. And I get up to do my set, and the entire crowd by this time is just heckling, and they're all fucking monsters. And I get up to do my set, and I almost have the crowd calm down enough to where I can start doing jokes. And I get to the punchline of one of my best, the racist white chick joke. I get to the punchline of that joke, and this fucking guy that we hired to do the sound just goes, "Tuck it in." And I'm like, first of all, what the fuck does that mean?
What an asshole.
And I just completely lost it. And in the middle of my set, I was like, if we don't fire this guy right now, I'm not filming tomorrow. I was like, we'll find another sound guy. I'm not finishing my set. I'm not filming tomorrow if we don't fire this motherfucker right now. And they did. And that felt great, because what a piece of shit that guy was. We were going to have to work with him the whole day. So I fired someone in the middle of my set the first time I did jokes in Santa Cruz. And then somehow the next night was worse.
How did it get worse?
We did this show in this back room of a bar that was all like candlelight and couches. So motherfuckers might as well have been sleeping, which is the last thing you need for comedy. And they just didn't laugh at anything at all.
In Santa Cruz?
In Santa Cruz, yeah. And I went up to do my set, and I was like, well, I'm not even going to get off the couch. I'm just going to sit on this couch and do my set. And at one point, I looked at a guy and was like, what is the problem here? And I shit you not, he goes, you people from L.A. steal all our water.
What?
Is fucking happening here?
And so, he went all environmental on your ass.
Yeah, yeah. What a weird grudge to hold against entertainers. And then I go downstairs and I'm talking to this guy and about what we're doing, about the recording thing we did. And he was like, "Oh, next time you're in Santa Cruz." I was like, "I'm never fucking coming back to Santa Cruz." But I did with Portugal the Man. And the Santa Cruz show, the difference was Chris Black, the DJ, went first. In Sacramento, I went first. Zach and Chris came out and introduced me, so the crowd was really calm and receptive to it. But the next night, Chris went up first, and the crowd was, it was a completely different energy. They were, like, ready for music, and then I was coming out in the middle of that to tell jokes. And before I even started telling a joke, I just reached for the microphone, and this guy in the audience goes, "Say something."
You're like, "I'm about to."
Yeah, I was like, "I'm going to take it easy." And he just glares at me the whole fucking set like he wants to murder me. It was a really bad set. Like it was my worst show of the tour by far. But then I'm hanging out at a bar after, and I'm outside on the sidewalk smoking, and I hear off in the distance someone go, "Say something." And I'm like, "What the fuck?" Yeah, I'm like, "What the fuck is happening?" And I look up, and it's that guy. And he walks up and shakes my hand and goes, "Hey, man, you were really funny tonight." I was like, "Motherfucker, I thought you wanted to murder me. What the fuck?"
But I've had that with American crowds is people always have the need to yell something, I feel. It's just, I think it's just a thing. Not positive, not negative. It just took me at least 5 shows to get used to people yelling stuff. Like, even when Portugal would play, in between songs, 50 people yelling just something, just whatever. Could be, I love you, could be, play this, could be, hell yeah, could be, louder, could be, you know, just something. It's just a, I don't know, it's just maybe an American rock and roll kind of thing, just to yell stuff. Because it really took me a while to get used to it. I was like, man, I think these people are heckling me. And then Zach was like, no, you're fine. What do you mean? I don't know. This is weird.
Yeah, and the weirdest part is they think they're helping, usually. Like, that's, if anytime I talk to an actual heckler after a show, they're like, what? It just makes it funnier. It's like, no, it doesn't.
But that's a comedy thing, right? Like,
oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, hecklers are a pretty common thing.
So you're kind of, it's kind of a, it comes with the job kind of thing.
Yeah, it happens. I had some really tenacious hecklers with these crowds. Like, you would get someone who, just for like the first 5 or 10 minutes of my set, would just consistently try to interrupt. And the thing is, in a crowd that size, I figure I don't want to engage that person. Like, it's a good way to derail the show, because I'm just up there by myself. I don't have music or anything. So if it starts going bad, it can go really bad really quick. So I normally just try and anticipate when that person is going to yell, and I just sort of cut them off.
And like how?
Well, you can, like, timing is a big part of comedy. And the type of heckler I got the most on these shows was the person who would try to yell something right before the punchline. So if you just kind of alter your timing a little bit, like, not in a detrimental way, but just enough that you can kind of sync up with that person, and you just have to sort of anticipate when they're going to yell, and you either get to it first or you just talk louder. And eventually, they're kind of like internet trolls. If you engage with them, they get worse. If you ignore them, they just eventually go away.
Yeah, I get it. But would you say, like, in comedy, the heckler, is it an ill-spirited thing, or is it just part of the comedy world? Like, is it like battle rap, you know, like dissing? No. Just comes with the territory? Or is it, I mean, or are there people that, like, are known for heckling, or is it just an asshole thing, or is it, you know what I mean?
That would be so sad if there was just a dude who was, like, known as a professional heckler. Oh,
that would, people would be like, oh man, yeah, that dude way back when, he heckled the hell out of Jim Carrey. Carrey never recovered from that. That's why he went into movies. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's no one like that. The thing is, at actual comedy shows, heckling is very much discouraged. I mean, it happens because you're dealing with crowds of drunk Americans usually. But talking in general at comedy clubs, like, just holding a conversation for too long can get you kicked out of a traditional comedy club.
Really?
Yeah, because it, you know, that one person can ruin the night for, you know, 50, 100, 150, 200 people. And those are people, especially at comedy clubs, they've paid higher ticket prices than, like, I charge $10 when I go out on the road. We bring 4 comics. There's no, you don't have to buy drinks if you don't want to. It's, you know, we try to keep it really cheap. But at comedy clubs in the U.S., tickets are usually $15 to $20. And then there's a 2-drink minimum. And drinks in LA are expensive as shit. So it can be a really expensive night for people. And just one person can just kind of fuck that up for everybody. Because I don't think heckling's always a mean-spirited thing. I think people do genuinely think they're making the show better. But I don't think there's a single documented instance of a heckler actually making a show better. They just kind of distract from what people are there for. So at comedy clubs, it's really strict. Like, you don't.
That could be like a new age job thing, you know, like Instagram model or a Snapchat celebrity, like, just world's best heckler. Like, people go out of the show and, like, dude, that heckler, he heckled good.
It wouldn't surprise me if that becomes a thing at some point. Like, clubs will pay this motherfucker to come and heckle comics.
Oh, man, that would be the worst. Like I was saying, like, I mean, we had this talk a bunch of times, but I think that, like, if you're in a band, and even if your band sucks, even if you're in the worst band on the planet, and you play a bar and there's just, like, some barflies hanging out, you finish a song, 9 times out of 10, someone's going to still, you know, clap, like, give you some applause, right?
Right.
But if you're the worst comic ever, like, and you have to go through a set and you end a joke and no one laughs, that's got to be so much harder because, you know, like, the comic thing, it's like an ongoing act. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're in a band, it's like start song, song ends, start next song. And it doesn't really matter if you get no applause at all. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I have so much respect for what you did, because, I mean, first of all, I had the feeling you won a lot of those crowds over, and you probably made, like, new followers and, you know, people, you know, it went really well for you. But I imagine, like, just starting to be a comic, like, having to learn all that, and pretty much most of the learning happens on stage, that's got to be tough.
Yeah, and it's definitely tough. And what you were saying about a joke not generating laughs, that will happen, like, even with your best jokes sometimes. And it was more discouraging when I first started out. Like, now I'm confident in my jokes. I just know not every crowd, like, not everything is going to hit with every crowd. And sometimes it's my fault for not reading the crowd. Sometimes the crowd is just a bunch of dirty fucking hippies in Santa Cruz. it could be any number of things. And it's important to just especially recognize if a joke's not hitting. If you have a natural point where you can just cut it off and move on to the next thing, you should do that for sure. I mean, you can't lose confidence. You have to just try and get the crowd back. But yeah, it's definitely tough some nights. That is for sure. And a lot of these shows were definitely a challenge, but I think it made me a better comic. I mean, just doing that much comedy in that short amount of time, I was doing, you know, 25, 30 minutes every night, which, like, I normally do that 4 or 5 times a year. And here I was out, you know, 2.5 weeks doing it pretty much every night. Yeah, it was an experience. It was a great experience. I got to see you perform every night. That was fucking great.
Yeah, oh, thanks, man. And to me, it was always like, I was really nervous before every show because it was just such a wild card. I mean, especially going, like, deep, deep south, I wasn't sure what to expect.
Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned on one of the other podcasts we recorded this week, we were talking about the tour, and North Carolina fucking loved you. God damn, you killed in North Carolina.
North Carolina was crazy. Walking through that town during the day and just, you know, hanging out and catching the vibe of the town. I was walking around with my friend who DJ'd or just press play or whatever you want to fucking call it. we were like, this is not going to go well. This is just some town in what? South Carolina? North Carolina?
North Carolina. Yeah, we were in
Carrboro. And then when we got on stage, I was like, man, this is crazy. They actually kind of liked it. That was awesome. And then going into New York, that was the night I was really nervous. And that's what I would say was my toughest crowd.
Yeah, New York was tough. They were, for one thing, they took a long time to show up. Well, I think it was more filled out when you went up, but the room was still almost empty when I went up. And
no, you had a good half full. It was good half full.
But yeah, they were tough. They were a weird kind of crowd. I think the country was just tense because it was the night before the election.
Man, for me, just being there during... did you hear that?
I did.
Yeah, I live in the hood. No, it's just way too loud. It's too loud of a neighborhood. I got to move out of the city, man. I'm getting sick of this. But just being in the States during the whole election thing, I mean, it wasn't even planned for me to be there. I was only supposed to be there for that week during the whole LA show and Pomona show thing. And then when we had the day off, I stayed in New York and I watched it in a bar. It was, you know, just from a European perspective, it's crazy. Just like the whole thing of sitting down and you know, I don't know how common the topic is to you guys, but to us it was Brexit all over again times 100,000,000, you know what I mean? So we sat down, we were like, yeah, this is never gonna happen. So, you know, like, this is not gonna happen. And everybody in the bar was like that. Nah, that's not gonna happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that was everyone's attitude going into it. I was in New York too. I went down to Trump Tower just to see what kind of carnage was happening there. And I almost went to bed because it looked good for Clinton at first. And I figured she was just a few minutes away from winning Florida and I could just go to bed happy. And then it just turned and it did not go that way at all. And yeah, it was bad times. And you have kind of an interesting take on it. Were you raised here?
Yeah, I was. I'm an army baby. So my father was stationed in Germany, and he met my mom in Germany. They had my sister, then they had me, and then I think when I was a month old, we moved out to the States. So I was raised in Augusta, Georgia, and we left when I was 11. Yeah. So that's why my English doesn't suck.
Right, right.
but not having that much of an accent actually puts me in way more awkward positions, I found out during this tour. Because a lot of times I won't find the one right word to get my point across, or a cashier with like heavy Southern accent or whatever accent, or just be talking really fast, I won't understand right away. So cashier would be like, I'll be like, excuse me? I'm like, excuse me? Do you want the receipt? And I'm like, man, if I had a heavy accent, like a heavy, oh, I would like to buy this, he would have slowed down and he would have known I'm not from the States. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not having that much of a European accent, he just thought I was the dumbest person on earth. And that happened to me like, 5 times a day.
Yeah, you had a weird run in Baltimore, right? With the bartender there.
Oh man, but the bartender, man, he was oh man. So what we would do a lot of times was we would finish our set and then we would hang out, and then, you know, just finding out that the guys buy the beer themselves, we were like, well, if they're not in the room, we're not just going to go behind their backs and drink all their beer. We'll get like one beer or something, but we're not going to like slam 10 cans of that
right
while they're playing, you know? So we would go out to the bar and we'd just get a beer and watch the show from wherever, like from in the crowd, or we'd go visit the merch guy and hang out there, or, you know, just hang out.
Yeah.
So in Baltimore, we went out, we went to the bar, and I had my card in my hand. I was like, I'd like to have 2 beers. And this huge guy, he was a tall guy, just had his arms crossed and just stared at me. I was like, all right, 2 beers? Just kept staring at me. I was like, man. So I started getting the sweats. I'm like, am I the idiot or what? So he kept just staring me down. I'm like, all right, 2 beers, please. And again, he kept straight staring at me, didn't say a word. Then he leant forward, and all he said was, so you're going to tell me what the fuck kind of beer you want or what? Whoa. Wasn't expecting that. Then I just told him whatever beer. And then I gave him my card, and then I didn't tip him. And then he said something else, which was really snotty. I was like, dude, give me a break. Cut me some slack here, dude.
Welcome to America.
It's like, yeah, like, welcome to that. But, man, it was all good times. It was all good times. Yeah, I'd say Carrboro was the best crowd. I would say New York was the toughest. What would you say was your best?
Dallas. I think Dallas was the best show I've ever done, period. Like, it was
all in all?
Yeah, it was almost a perfect show. Like, everyone, at one point in the middle of my set, it was a point where I needed people to kind of be quiet and listen. And there were 1,500 people. You could have heard a pin drop. They were so fucking quiet. and just everyone was paying attention. And oh, I love Dallas. I want to go back to Dallas.
Oh, and, man.
Good barbecue, too.
So what were your first thoughts going into this tour? Were you like, oh, man, yeah, this is, I'm going to crush it? Or did you give it, or did you just go head first and like, all right, I'm just going to dive in, see what gets out of it? Or were you like...
Well, I felt pretty good about it because I had kind of the way it happened sort of is they flew me out for their show at Red Rocks. I had never been to Red Rocks. And once they booked that show, I was like, oh,
that looked crazy.
It was fucking amazing.
Like how many people?
I think it was just under 10,000. They sold it out.
It's like in a mountain or in a gorge or what?
Yeah, it's just kind of cut into the side of this rock formation in the desert. And it was like naturally cut that way. They just kind of had to add a stage, sort of. Like it was already sort of a natural stage. It's just a really amazing like piece of work. It's like seeing a concert in the Grand Canyon. It's crazy.
Crazy.
And I was flying out for that already, and they had booked a smaller show the night before at a club in Boulder, Colorado, which is like 20 miles away. And they were like, hey, since you're flying out, we don't have an opening act for that show. Do you want to open for us? And I was like, fuck, yes, I want to open for you. That would be amazing. And I was kind of apprehensive opening for a band. I didn't know what kind of energy it would be. Right before I went up, my friend Jeff May, who's also a comic, goes, this is going to be the worst night of your life.
He did not.
Yeah, I mean, he was joking, but he was just half joking because it very well could have been. But I went out and my first joke hit and I was like, okay, I'm going to be fine. So, and then that show went really well. And I think that kind of boosted my confidence a little. The thing that helps is that the band comes out and introduces me.
Yeah.
Most of the time when, like on the rare instances when comics open for bands, they just have to kind of go out and start talking. And it would have been a fucking disaster if I had to do that. Zach and Chris coming out and introducing me first and people recognizing them from the band, I think that helped a lot. Because when we were in Baltimore, they were saying, the woman who ran the venue there said they just had another musician who had a comic opening for him. I remember that the musician's name was Sturgill Simpson, but they don't remember the comic's name.
Oh, you know Sturgill Simpson?
He's, yeah, I know of him.
Country guy, right?
Yeah, he's great. He, I guess he had a comic opening for him when he was in Baltimore, too, and they said it was just a disaster.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, I think it helps that the band was kind of involved in bringing me out on stage.
Why do you think people keep telling you this stuff in beforehand?
I don't know.
Every time you go out, people are like, oh, this is going to be horrible. Yeah, last week was the worst.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're just trying to warn me or so I'm not caught off guard, but I try not to let stuff like that discourage me. I don't like, even with these shows, the only show for some reason I was legitimately nervous for was Santa Cruz. And I just, because I felt like I was getting sick and I just hate Santa Cruz so much. So I just, and like the backstage area was outdoors and it was kind of cold. So I was just like, oh, fucking Santa Cruz. And for some reason, I was kind of nervous for that show. And that was my worst show. But normally, I don't, like, even on this tour, I didn't really get nervous before going up. Because I've just, you know, I've done it so much. And I've had bad shows in it. You know, if I have a bad show, the next show will be a good show.
Yeah. Man, everybody got sick on this tour, huh?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Did you end up getting sick, too?
Dude. I was fine. I was fine the whole tour. Like, I think Chris Black started the whole epidemic.
Yeah, I thought Chris Black was going to die in Alabama.
On Cubs night.
Yeah.
And when we got up that morning, he looked like he was about, he wasn't going to make it. It looked like the end. And then I think you caught on to it because you were like two or three, I think one or two days after, you're like, oh, man, I think I got the thing.
Yeah.
And then John started talking about it. I was like, you know what? It's a head thing. I'm not going to let it get to my head. I'll be fine. And I was completely fine right until the Urbana show.
Oh, yeah.
Like right before, I think an hour before I was supposed to go on stage, where we had the Thai food, which kind of sucked.
Oh, that shit was awful. It was the worst.
I started getting the shivers, and then I put on a sweatshirt, and then I put on another sweatshirt, and I was like, oh man, not now, please not now. And then like I got sick right before the show. I was like, oh, this is the worst. And then when I went to the hotel that night, I could tell it was getting real. I think that's when it really hit. So I had all that shit on my like 20-hour flight back. I was like shivering and coughing and running nose and feverish and popping Dayquils, and it was the worst.
Yeah, it definitely went around. That always happens to me though when I switch, because it's inevitable when you tour in the U.S. We were talking about this at one point. It's so big that it's not unusual to go from, like we did, we went from Georgia and Alabama, where it was in the 80s and 90s, and then we get to North Carolina, and it's like in the 50s. And that just changing climate like that is just, it's just havoc. It wreaks havoc on your respiratory system. And I was probably smoking more than I needed to. I smoke a lot when I'm on the road. It's not good.
But yeah, like, I always knew how big the states are, but you don't realize until you have to travel, right? Because, like, even flying out to the Alabama show, I was like, yeah, I'll book a flight. I'll fly out to Alabama. And, like, in Germany, I think the longest in-country flight you could do is, I think, maybe 2.5 hours. That's, like, the longest local flight you could do, maybe 3. And then I was like, yeah, I'll fly out to Birmingham. How long is that going to take? And it ended up being like a 9-hour trip.
Yeah. Yeah. Birmingham is a haul for sure.
Like, wow. And then like because we were thinking about taking our own car and just driving the dates. And some of those drives would have been like 20-hour drives.
Yeah. Dallas to Birmingham and Phoenix to Dallas both would have been crazy long drives. I thought about driving too, but with ending in Illinois, I would have had to basically drive back to Los Angeles. I guess I could have dropped the car in Illinois, but yeah, I ended up just flying too. It was easier.
Yeah, man. So are you guys any further on the fastball thing?
we're making progress. I still have to send Chet your video. I just remembered we did a fastball video somewhere.
In Covington.
Yeah, Covington. Covington was fun. Yeah, I have to send Chet that. We're getting there. It's funny. They actually did a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe to pay for their next album, and they made the $7,500 reward. They will play a show in your living room, and that's what Chet's trying to do, is get this band to play in his living room. So I don't know if they think we're going to give them $7,500, but no.
Definitely.
Hell no.
Definitely not.
You guys have all the endorsements. You guys have Portugal the Man. You guys have Ben Folds.
Ben fucking Folds.
That story is hilarious, by the way. That's a really good podcast episode.
Thank you. We actually plugged you on that episode of today's episode of that podcast, because that's a podcast where we talk about like normally about movies and music and things people should check out.
Sweet.
We told people to check out Casper. God damn it.
Ah, sweet, man.
Hinterland is such a great album.
Did you really hear it?
Yeah, I've been listening to it a bunch since I got home.
Oh, man. It's crazy.
There's one song you played that I can't find on Spotify. And it's the song with like that guitar riff.
Oh, I know which one you mean. Yeah.
I can't find that. Can't find it on Spotify.
You can find it on Spotify. If you go to the Spotify, there's an album called XOXO, and it's song 9, I think is what you mean.
Okay.
With the guitar riff.
Yeah.
Could be. Could be. Thanks, man.
Everybody should check out Casper.
Yeah, I'll return the favor for sure.
Yeah, and hopefully we can, I'm trying to get rally up Maria Shahada to come out and do some comedy shows around your way.
Dude, I have you all set up. All I need is if you have like a video link or something that I can show people, I have you all set up for gigging around Germany, man.
I am all for that, especially those refrigerators full of beer and all the free food.
Dude, it'll be like paradise.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
All right, man, we should probably wrap it up. We're getting close to an hour.
This is my very, very first podcast appearance ever.
We are honored to have you to be your first podcast. This was so much fun.
So glad to be in a podcast because I love podcasts so much. I'm so glad to be in your podcast. So glad we met. It was an awesome tour. Didn't mean to talk bad on baseball. Just don't know anything about it. I know nothing about baseball. And yeah, man, you should definitely come over, or you know, whenever you feel like we should do a podcast thingy, just call me up and love to do it, man.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, thank you for doing it this time. I really appreciate it. It was so much fun touring with you and getting to see you rock every night. You're so fucking great. Such a great performer. Ugh.
You live in the hood too.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, I'm in downtown LA. So that's a pretty regular noise for me.
Downtown didn't look too bad. Like the last time I saw downtown, I think was like 7 or 8 years ago. It was fucking Skid Row, but now it looked awesome. Looked like a fun place to hang.
Yeah. It's definitely, been revitalized. I fucking love it. This is, I live here. I record here. This is my home. I like it.
All right, man. I'll be back out in LA first January week. So if you want to grab some beers sometime, I am down.
Yeah, definitely. Hit me up when you're in town. I'm always free.
Will do. Shout outs to the podcast community, man.
shout out to Germany.
Yeah.
Hopefully we will get some fans in Germany for when we come out and do those shows.
We'll get it going. We'll get it going. We will spread the movement here.
Yeah, I'm into it. All right, man. Thanks so much. I will talk to you soon.
All right, man.
All right. Later. Thanks.
Bye.
Ich kann es, plötzlich ist alles anders. Sie campen vor den Hallen und fragen nach Autogrammen. Kreischen nun meinen Namen, klappen dabei zusammen. Habe nun Machtanfälle, bevor wir angefangen haben. Komm aus nem Redneck-Hort, liebe NASCAR dort, so wie Chevy Ford. Wo der Fett am Korb in nem Messlabor seine Päckchen kocht. Allein mit Tape Recorder dort in dem Kinderzimmer. Großgezogen auf Peter Tosh, Dylan und Leonard Skinner. Sommer immer nie Winter, Sand so rot wie die Haut. Zirpende Grillen klingen, Moskitos so groß wie ne Faust. Ey yo, ich kam von daher, Stadt des Mardi Gras, Land aller Drumliner. Kuku wie Voodoo und zu verflucht heiß wie das Jambalaya.
Halleluja, alle Halleluja, endlich ist es wieder soweit. Hey, 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 ein paar wollen es probieren, hey, versucht ihn zu kopieren. Hey, und nun ist es endlich mal Zeit
für das Original. Tun, was er will, tun, was er will. So groß kann den Himmel berühren, also Prost, es wird nie mehr so wie früher. Das Original. Tun, was er will. So groß kann den Himmel berühren. Also Prost, es wird nie mehr so wie früher.
8 zu der 9, 9 zu der 10. Alle Nachrichten dürfen gerne jetzt gehen. So, 3, 4.
Erst kam die Kopie, dann die Kopie der Kopie. Indie basierte Beats, gespielte Melancholie. Tagebuch, Poesie, billig klingende Melodie. Yeah. Alle wollen sein wie mein Team, aber wissen leider nicht wie. Komm mit der Boom, Boom, Bait im Rücken, Wände zittern. Fühl die Bässe drücken, die Fans im Geländer sich ans Ende schwitzen. Stundenlang Hände schütteln, Küsschen für Mr. Griffey. Kam von Atlanta, Alabama zu den Sümpfen von Mississippi. Yo, mit Schrot in den Flinten, nimm sofort Dosen, wir schießen. Biss mich von unten nach oben, so wie nen Krokodilkiefer. Ey yo, vom Trailer Park zum Szene-Star. Denk jedes Jahr, ging ewig lang, aber sieht mal an, wir sind endlich da.
Halleluja, alle Halleluja. Endlich ist es wieder soweit. Hey, hey, hey. Ein paar wollen es probieren. Hey, versucht ihn zu kopieren. Hey, doch nun ist es endlich mal Zeit
für das Original.
Get up, get up, get up.
Tun, was er will, tun, was er will. So groß
genauso wie früher das Original. Tun, was er will, tun, was er will. So groß kann den Himmel berühren, also Prost, es wird nie mehr so wie früher. Yeah.